What's the Frequency, Kenneth? Is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Handlebar, offering 28 taps of craft beer, German-inspired pub fare, and an outdoor patio on 20th Street in Chico, next to Winco. Open every day at 12 noon. The Handlebar, a specialty beer bar for the adventurer. Check out The Handlebar on Facebook or call 894-BEER for more information. And by Affordable Automotive, now with four locations to serve you. Affordable on Park Avenue, Affordable Automotive West at West Sac and Nord, Chico Custom Classics at 1024 West 8th Street, and Chico Auto Care Ace Radiator at 9th and Ivy, the only radiator shop in Butte County. From basic vehicle maintenance to major repairs, the Affordable Automotive family of shops has been entrusted with over 26 years of service. For appointments and details, call 530-892-1774 or visit chicoautomotive.com. If you enjoy this program, you can now go to kzfr.org and tip this show.
Hello, you're listening to KZFR. It's 90.1 FM, Chico listener-supported radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond, and it's on the internet at kzfr.org. And I'm Ken Logan, and you're listening to the Doctor's Inn here shortly. First, I'm going to do my best to get a little song going. It's called The Doctor's Inn by Loudon Wainwright III. Let's see if I can do that.
To the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, in the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple, it's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse, don't spill it now. I went to the doctor, doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. Better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, sir, we got back the x-ray.
Well, hello. Again, this is Dr. Ken Logan, and you're listening to The Doctor's Inn on KZFR. I want you to know that the opinions voiced on this show don't necessarily represent, however, the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. What you're hearing is my opinion. And by the way, The Doctor's Inn is made possible, here's some underwriters, by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner with the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit Friends of the Arts. And by Tires Plus, complete auto repair. The technicians at Tires Plus provide year-round services and maintenance for your vehicle, including scheduled maintenance, oil changes, air conditioning and cooling systems, powder coating, and engine repair, along with Cooper Michelin and all types of ag tires. Located at 624 Broadway Street, Tires Plus. Complete auto repair can be reached at 530-342-8338, at tiresplus.com, and on Facebook. So there you go. All right. And again, welcome to the Doctor's Inn. Again, let me tell you who I am. I'm Ken Logan, family practice doc here in Chico, California. And I do the Doctor's Inn the third Thursday of every month, 6 to 7 in the evening. And I discuss things that I think are important for us all to share, information-wise mainly, health and medical related. And on today's The Doctor's Inn, what I'm going to be doing is just that. I'm going to be reporting on some little tidbits of medical news, medical and health news. And the sources that I'm using today not only include the Health Justice Monitor, which is a publication by two physicians, a Dr. Kahn and a Dr. McCann, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, that you can obtain on your email via email for free. But also, a lot of what I'm going to talk about today actually comes from an organization of which I do not belong, and that is the American Medical Association. Even though I don't belong to that organization, I still receive on my computer, on my email, some what they call the AMA, or American Medical Association, morning rounds. And what it is little blips of information, medical news from around the country and around the world, from different organizations and different publications, etc. I think it's a good thing. And I'm going to read you some of the latest stuff, little tidbits. And I'll expand when I feel I want to do that. So here I'm going to start with is what they talked about, a report from the CDC, or Center for Disease Control and Prevention in the United States, that the infant mortality, so death of babies, in the United States last year, infant mortality increased by 3%. Now, I realize 3% is not a big number of percent rise, but it's a rise in baby deaths in 2022. And I think that's, part of me points to our healthcare system on that. And I'm going to talk about healthcare system in a few minutes as well, after we talk about some other things. But the major factors that led to an increase in infant mortality last year was pregnancy complications and sepsis. Sepsis means infection in the total body, probably of the mother and the baby. So that's something for us to keep in mind. All right, next. A study came out finding that this is a good thing, that in people with diabetes who have neuropathy or nerve dysfunction problems, such as nerve dysfunction in their feet or other areas of their body, like their stomach, etc., that body activity or routine physical activity, I'm not talking a lot of exercise, but just routine body activity, physical activity, helped improve the neuropathies generally. And that's a big deal. I want you to know, as a doctor that I am, has been around for, I've been practicing for 41 years or so. So, it's a big deal when neuropathy from diabetes can be improved. Generally, it's felt when neuropathy occurs that it's a done deal. Your nerves aren't coming back. But they're seeing some improvement if you do some regular activity. I think that's great for us to know. Next, I want you to know that, of course, we're entering into the winter, and that is, quote-unquote, virus season. And what that means is the respiratory viruses, the ones that give us a cold or give us the influenza or even a respiratory syncytial virus or COVID, are going to increase as winter hits us and we're all packed into indoors, breathing each other's air. So the reason it's important is that vaccinations, I am a physician who is definitely in favor of vaccinations for things such as flu, influenza. And now is the time to get your annual influenza shot. Influenza shot is not one that you get occasionally. No, you get it every year because it's changed depending on the virus. The influenza viruses every year. So now is, if you haven't had it yet for this season, it's time to get it now. You also are advised to get RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, and of course update your COVID if you're of age to do that. And by the way, influenza vaccine is advised for all adults. I'm sorry, all people in this country, 6 months of age and older. The next thing that they brought up in the medical news was looking at something that we've known about for a long time and seems to be worsening as time goes on, and that's burnout amongst healthcare professionals, that is, often in physicians and nurses. Burnout, you know, where the stress of the job and the for a variety of reasons brings them down, and some, of course, quit or can function not as well when they're in a life of stress and burnout. So the first thing I want to wish upon all of us in this medical field is that we all work together, please, in as friendly and mutually respectful way with doctors, nurses, and patients, you know, people we're helping, all of us working together in a friendly and mutually respectful way as possible as a team that we are, physicians, nurses, other healthcare professionals, and the patients, all of us, as a mutually respectful team, please. I personally feel also, this is an aside, I don't know if I need to say this, but without going into detail, I find electronic medical records and the, at least for the way they are set up and utilized at this point in time, are part of the additional stress on physicians. I don't know about other professionals. just to let you know that. I could go into detail, but I'm not going to. Of interest is artificial intelligence and the thoughts physicians may have relative to, of course, there will be benefits to healthcare, I think, with artificial intelligence. But there's, when a survey was taken of physicians in the United States, two-thirds of those physicians questioned were concerned about potential problems with artificial intelligence as it becomes utilized in the country relative to healthcare. So in the healthcare world, we need to be very watchful, as we do in other places where artificial intelligence is going to be utilized. We have to really keep a close eye on it, please, all of us. Now, this bit of medical news from the AMA Morning Rounds is talking about something that I'm that maybe many of you may not have heard of, and in people my age, I'm 70 years old, I've certainly heard of it through my lifetime, but you people, younger people, may not have heard of it, and that is congenital syphilis. And that is babies born with syphilis being present in them as an infection when they're born. There's some recent negative information about that in the United States. And I'm going to just tell you, I'm going to tell you more about it this in a minute, but the incidence of that has gone up as of 2022. And I want to tell you, it's phenomenal how much it's gone up. But first, I'm going to tell you about syphilis, because you may not know what syphilis is. So I'll be simple here. Syphilis is a sexually transmitted disease that is an infection, and it's a bacteria. It's a unique bacteria. And over the last, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years, we've done very well in really backing it down in frequency. It's a little bit of an odd bacteria, unique bacteria. Again, it's sexually transmitted. Part of the uniqueness about the infection untreated is that it goes through a couple phases, three phases, primary, secondary, and tertiary. And tertiary, in the olden days before antibiotics, we would see people with, because it can be killed by antibiotics, syphilis can, but it has to be treated at the right time, early on. And it should be prevented in the first place, but nonetheless, if it isn't treated early on and it goes on to tertiary or this type of over time syphilis infection, it infects the brain and literally makes people crazy. Their brains don't work right. In the 100 years ago, people in what was called insane asylums, a certain percentage of those people had tertiary syphilis. Just letting you know. But last year, 2022, the incidence of congenital syphilis, or babies with syphilis born in the United States, was 11 times more common. Not twice as common, not three times as common, not even 10 times as common. 11 times more common in 2022 when compared to 10 years prior, 2012. 11 times more common. There were the number, if you look at it for the United States, 4,000 cases of congenital syphilis last year in the United States. And you may think 4,000 out of, you know, all those babies in the United States, that's not real bad. Well, it's, you know, I could see where you could say that. But this is a disease that was markedly less common. We had done such a great job. So how do we fix that? Well, number one, intercourse needs to be protected, protective relative to passing of infectious diseases, and therefore testing. By the way, for those of you who are interested in having testing done for yourself or for venereal diseases, one of the blood tests that should be included is the syphilis blood test. It's easily found, or relatively easily found, by blood test. Other venereal diseases, sexually transmitted diseases that are found by blood test are hepatitis B, HIV, you know, AIDS, and syphilis. Hepatitis C isn't exact, it is probably has some infectious disease elements to it. I'm sorry, sexually transmitted infectious disease elements to it. And it too can be found, of course, by blood test. So syphilis blood tests, if you're concerned, your primary care provider or other provider, you can have syphilis blood tests. It's easy to do. On to another subject, and that is lung cancer. I've got a fair amount here to talk about relative to lung cancer. And this is, again, in medical news. So, first of all, it's the issue of lung cancer, and cigarette smoking is part of that, of course. As you know, probably the vast majority of people who acquire lung cancer in their life were cigarette smokers. That is the main cause of lung cancers, not the only cause. We don't know what other causes are sometimes, but we absolutely know that cigarette smoking is the main cause for lung cancer. Therefore, when we're doing screening tests for cancer on people, be it, you know, screening tests for breast cancer, screening tests for prostate cancer, screening tests for cervical cancer, what about screening tests for lung cancer? Lung cancer happens to be when we look at the population of men and women together in the United States, the population of men and women together, lung cancer is the most common cancer killer in us. It is top of the list on killing men and women as a group of men and women together, population. Lung cancer is the killer. the main killer, or is the top of the list killer, kills more people than any other cancer. So, screening tests for that. Wouldn't it be cool? Fortunately, over the last year or two, some people interested in screening tests have honed in on something called low-dose CT scans or low-dose CAT scans. And low-dose as in a limited amount, limited as possible amount of radiation to the patient, to the person getting the test. Thank goodness. And by the way, regular chest x-rays aren't sensitive enough. You miss it. You miss early lung cancer when you get a chest x-ray only. And I don't know how low-dose CT scan and chest x-ray, those two compare relative to amount of radiation. But I do know that it's a big deal. The medical experts advising that low-dose CT scan be the screening test for who? For people who are at risk for lung cancer. And who is that? Cigarette smokers. So cigarette smoking, we already talked about the fact that cigarette smoking is the most common cause of the biggest killer in the men and women in the United States relative to cancer, lung cancer. So screening of cigarette smokers, but not any cigarette smoker. It's cigarette smokers who have smoked for 20 years or more. 20 years or more of smoking are advised if you're in the age, this is the latest, if you're in the age group of 50 to 80 years of age. So in your 50s, 60s, or 70s, and you are smoking and have smoked for 20 years or more, or did smoke for 20 years or more in your past, it's no longer felt that, oh, after 15 years or so, you can just let it go. If you've stopped 15 years ago, you had 20 or 30 years of smoking and you stopped 15 years ago, you don't have to worry about lung cancer. And that's not the case. We're not finding that as the actuality anymore, oddly enough. So the advice is, if you're in the age of, in your 50s, 60s, or 70s of age, and you have smoked or are smoking and have done so for 20 years or more, you are advised to get a low-dose CT scan of the lungs as a screening test for lung cancer. If lung cancer is found not early, we have a very poor likelihood to cure. If it is found early, before signs or symptoms, that, in other words, via a screening test like this low-dose CT of the lungs, and you have no signs or symptoms and it's very early, you have a higher chance of curing it, of being cured. Never have it kill you. Live a full life. Speaking of that, another bit of information that I found in the medical news, the subject of lung cancer survival rates in the United States have been improving. That's a good thing, actually. Why has it been improving, the survival rates? More people are actually living after a diagnosis of lung cancer in the United States. Well, the treatment modalities have significantly improved over the last 30 years. That's for sure. And couple that with screening tests. I was just talking about the low-dose CT in people in their 50s, 60s, 70s who have 20 years or more of smoking ever in their life. My God, the numbers in lung cancer survival are going to swing in a positive way, I'm feeling. Of interest, this survival rates, the CDC is the one who came up with these numbers of the survival rates in different states in the United States recently. And as an interesting fact, the states seem to vary. I mean, not greatly, but somewhat. Get this. The survival rate of lung cancer in Rhode Island is the best at 33.3%. In other words, a third This is amazing. A third, this really is amazing. A third of the people who get a diagnosis of lung cancer in Rhode Island live. That's actually a big portion. That's actually pretty good. It's going to get better if we find more cancers earlier with screening CT. But the one that was the worst so far, and they're going to get better hopefully, is Oklahoma. Their survival rate was the lowest at 20, a little hair over 20%, so a fifth of them. Well, a third of the people diagnosed in Rhode Island live. A fifth of the people in Oklahoma live once they're diagnosed with lung cancer. But so that's just interesting. But it's, the good news is survival rates are improving with lung cancer in the United States because of treatment. It can be even better if low-dose CT lung scanning is done for people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s who have a 20-year or more history of cigarette smoking, whether they're currently smoking or not. Well, I beat that up, didn't I? And remember, again, lung cancer is not some little weird thing. It's the most... Lung cancer is the cancer that kills more people than any other cancer in the population of men and women together in the United States. All right. Now, so I think I've got lung cancer and venereal disease on my brain today, because now the next one from the AMA, American Medical Association news, is talking about a test, what they're calling a home test. But that's not exactly true, and I'm going to, so listen to this, for chlamydia and gonorrhea. Chlamydia and gonorrhea both are bacteria that are venereal diseases, in other words, sexually transmitted diseases. Now, they're not as nasty as syphilis is to the human body, but they are nasty to the human body, and people can carry them without having symptoms. Let me say this again, for all those of you who did not know this fact. It's distinctly a fact that people can be carrying chlamydia and or gonorrhea, which are both venereal diseases of bacteria, without having any symptoms. Therefore, without even any symptoms, spreading it to other people if unprotected intercourse is occurring. So, anyway, back to this home test that's being developed, been is already developed by this company in the United States, which I'm going to tell you about. I'm going to tell you the name of this product in a minute. But the thing that's newsworthy currently is that the Federal Drug Administration in the United States now told the company that they can market it. And they can market their product. In other words, advertise it, I guess. And my opinion is, okay, I don't want everybody to get all excited about it until I think it's a good thing to head in that direction of testing. But as far as it being a home test, it isn't. You collect the sample at home, but you have to send it to a lab. You don't get the result at home. It's not like the in-home COVID tests, you know, where you see the result right away at home. Nope. This is that you the only benefit is you don't have to go to the doctor's office to get the sample taken. You do the sample yourself. Then you have to send it to a lab. And I don't know what lab and all that. But then later you get the results. It's still a good thing, but it's kind of a little bit of a misnomer to call it a home test. It is, but you just got to know the details. What I don't know as a doctor is, from my point of view, I don't know how accurate it will be. In other words, will it miss cases readily? Or will it say it's present when it's not chlamydia or gonorrhea? You know, so I don't know how the accuracy is on this test that has just come out. Nor do I know the cost of it. Nor do I know, of course, whether insurances are going to pay for that. So there are a lot of ifs in this subject of home testing, this testing thing that involves home acquiring of the sample for chlamydia and gonorrhea, but I think it's something to watch for. It is called Let's Get Checked's Simple 2 Test. That's a weird name, but I'm going to say it again. Therefore, just remember it's chlamydia and gonorrhea testing. Let's Get Checked's Simple 2, as in number 2 test. Let's Get Checked Simple 2 test for chlamydia and gonorrhea. That's all I know about that. Next, I'm going to go to a subject, again, newsworthy. This organization called Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, reported something that we've already known, but I'm just saying it again, and that's that in the United States, when compared to other countries, developed countries in the world, when we compare the United States to other developed countries in the world, we in the United States are the ones with the lowest life expectancy. In other words, our people die younger than their people. That's not something to be proud of. Many of us physicians here in the U.S. feel that at least part of that reason is that we, when compared to all those other developed countries in the world, are the only country that doesn't have a universal healthcare system. We're the only developed nation in the world that does not guarantee all of its citizens equal and appropriate healthcare. Ta-da! And I'm going to go on in just a minute about health insurance and the, even for the people who have health insurance, the problems with it in acquiring healthcare, actual healthcare. That's the next one up here in a minute. In this subject of us having the lowest life expectancy of all the developed countries in the world, in our healthcare system, we the people are the losers. The winners are the for-profit health insurance industry and the for-profit pharmaceutical industries. They're always the winner, always. We are always the losers if we look at it overall. We need our health care to be guaranteed to be able to occur for all of us equally in this country. Another problem in this country of health care is, of course, that we don't have enough primary care providers. Physicians mainly is what I'm thinking of. And we don't have enough nurses either. But it's not because we don't have enough interested students, people who are well able and desiring to be in medical school and become physicians. I work with them at the Shalom Free Clinic, these students from Chico State and some from Butte and other schools. I know them. They're very able. But they have difficulty getting in because there's limited schools. We need more medical schools in this country. And I think when it's a public health phenomenon and need like it is, that it would be best if our political people, our elected officials need to get involved with this and help us with this. They're like they can't do that? Yeah. There's ways of encouraging the addition of medical schools in this country. And not at costs that bankrupt the students. All right. Now, another news blurb from a company called the Commonwealth Fund. They did a survey this year in the United States asking questions to people in the United States who have health insurance. They did the survey in people who do have health insurance in the United States. They broke it into two categories, those who have employer-based health insurance policies versus people who have health insurance because they went to the open market and got their insurance policies themselves. Of course, there's often problems such as co-pays, deductibles, and share of cost elements. In other words, even though they have a health insurance policy, doesn't mean they don't have to put out money that stagnates them. Here again, it's the health insurance companies win, pharmaceutical companies win, and we the people lose. Here's examples of losing, even though they have, these people that they've surveyed have health insurance. And remember, health insurance, not Medicare or Medi-Cal. These are the ones who have health insurance from health insurance companies in our country. And remember, in our country, health insurance companies are for profit, which is part of the how we look different than other countries, developed countries. But nonetheless, here's this survey. Of the people who had health insurance because of health insurance via their work or via their employer, 43% of those people, even though they had health insurance, had difficulty affording their health care. Of the people who were, their health insurance was the open market, 57%, almost 60% of them, had difficulty affording their health care, even though they had health care. I mean, even though they had health insurance. Therefore, the survey also found that, get this, people delayed or skipped needed health care or delayed or skipped needed prescription medicines in these people with health care insurance. 30% of them delayed or skipped care or medicine from employer-based health insurance coverage. 37% of the people with open market health insurance plans skipped or delayed health care or skipped or delayed prescription medicines. That's how good our healthcare system is for the people who have health insurance policies. Because, remember, health insurance companies are greed-oriented. They are roadblocks. I, as a doctor, know this when I'm taking care of patients. Okay, another issue is the medical debt, therefore, was an ongoing presence in the lives of 30% of those people with employer-based insurance plans, and 33% in the ones on the open market. And now I'm going to read you a evaluation of this survey by Dr. James Kahn, K-A-H-N, M-D. He's a professor emeritus at UC San Francisco, and he's one of the people who put together this thing called the Health Justice Monitor, which is an evaluation of the healthcare system, depending on what's happening in our country. On a regular basis, they do put this out. You can get it by email. I get it for free via my email. You too can obtain it. And it's these two doctors that are quite wise, Dr. Kahn and Dr. McCann. Health Justice Monitor is the name of the publication. You can pull it up online and somehow get it to your email. He says about this survey about people having problems with being able to afford health care even though they have health insurance, private health insurance. He says this survey powerfully quantifies the failure of our insurance system to assure financial access to care. The findings aren't new, but they're still shocking, which raises questions. What's the purpose of U.S. health insurance? For me, in other words, for Dr. Kahn, the answer is clearer with each report released and each year that goes by. Fragmented health insurance system that we have is distinctly designed to benefit the powerful interests of insurance companies, pharmaceutical industry, and large providers. Who are the losers, he says? All of us needing medical services, even with insurance, are often financially out of reach relative to getting health care. That's sad. Dozens of other countries, he says, and I agree, have solved the health insurance coverage problem by doing universal lifelong coverage with identical comprehensive benefits for each of the people without the opportunity for profiteering and greed by the health insurance companies. That's our problem. The profiteering and greed by this massive industry of health insurance companies in our country. And you all know this, the massive greed by our for-profit pharmaceutical industries unfettered. It's sick. It makes us sick. Far lower costs and far better overall health outcomes happen in the other countries that have dealt with, don't have the profiteering issue by those industries. Embarrassing and painful survey results like this will disappear only once we adopt a single-payer insurance system. End of quote by Dr. Kahn from the Health Justice Monitor. And I say to Dr. Kahn, well said, thank you. And again, if you're interested in the Health Justice Monitor, you could pull it up and maybe get on their email list. I want to say, I'm such a talker. Well, that's what I wanted to say, that I'm such a talker. And I go off on little tangents and I end up not being able to talk about the things that I want to talk about as much, all of it anyway. So now I'm going to enter into another thing that I want to talk about, and I'm already knowing that I'm not going to be able to finish, but nonetheless, I'm going to give it a whirl. And this I want to talk about is one function that I want to talk about involving the human brain, and that's the potential for us to believe, us as humans, to believe something that's not factual, something that's not true. Even the discussing of this subject is tricky because it can be a subject that brings with it significant defensive posturing in some people who do have or utilizing that function of believing things that aren't true. They can get offended when you confront them. This brain function phenomenon in us humans is not a new thing, of course. However, it's a phenomenon that can stand out much more prominently at times in our history when it involves items or subjects of large, distinct importance and large, distinct consequences on humans, for instance. And, of course, in our day and age over the last, 6 years, it's around. It all kind of blossomed with Donald Trump, for sure. A related brain functions item, however, is something called the placebo effect, where that's a category of brain function where a person can have a belief that this pill is going to help them when the pill doesn't have any medicine in it, but because and it's not everybody that can do this, but there are a certain percentage of people in the world that can have a belief that that pill is going to help them, and they actually get better. Now, how are they going to get better? Were they going to get better without the pill? So that it's hard to zero in on the actuality of that, but belief in something plays a role in the solidity of what the outcome is for that person. Especially, and then where it really gets ugly and hurtful is in the political arena with Trump doing it, where his followers just follow him, even though and they don't want to listen to facts. They want to just believe him, which is unfortunate. another related brain function has to do with the ability to do abstract thought. And how I see it as related to the placebo effect is because of beliefs, that do not follow a provable, reproducible facts. But the believing in facts, however, that require... some people's brain aren't able to do this very well. Abstract thought, such as when we're trying to talk people about viruses and then the vaccination effect for preventing virus infections. Viruses are things that cannot be seen. I can't see them. You can't see them. The person who is not able to do abstract thought will go numb. When you talk about it, they're not hip to being able to formulate that idea and comprehend that. Well, how are they going to respond to me asking them or advising them to get a flu shot? One way, even if they can't do abstract thought very well, unfortunately, some of them might do this form of belief. They instead might get a flu shot. They don't know what a virus is, nor are they able to understand it. But if they believe me as a doctor, they may get a flu shot. So here it is again in a belief in the words from someone that they have respect for, like a doctor possibly. That might bring them to do something such as a shot for flu. And there's a publication called Daily Kos, KOS, and they were talking about this these two brain thing. One brain being the intelligent mind, and then in the same person, part of the brain being the mind that traffics in unreality, though. And one being knowing, and the other one being believing. And where that can be useful and other times not useful or bad. Like with Trump, it's bad. And in some people, reason rules more likely. In some people, however, emotion rules more likely. And then somebody went on and said, they quoted Voltaire in this discussion, said, anyone can get you to believe absurdities. Anyone who can get you to believe absurdities can get you to commit atrocities. Let me say that again. And think about January 6th. Anyone who can get you to believe absurdities can get you to commit atrocities. They say that was a Voltaire quote. And then following that is the issue of groups or tribalism in we humans, often following an alpha male. Don't ask me why. Maybe it's testosterone consequences of projection and behavior that bring about that charisma or something. I don't know why males usually, but they're following a leader who has some kind of charisma, a sociopath who has the ability to manipulate others, manipulate the followers, like Trump. Wow. And I don't know why it's often a male. Here's another quote by one of these people writing about this. Also, sometimes when you're in a group like that, like Republican Party, when you're in the Republican Party, when you realize you're wrong after deeply investing yourself into a worldview, it's hard to say that you were wrong about a whole lot of things. It's hard to admit it to yourself, hard to admit it to the world. If you don't have the moral fortitude to admit it, it can be easier to just simply be dragged along by the herd, by the Republican herd. I'm throwing in the Republican word there. As opposed to betraying them and accusing all of them of being wrong. Wow. The human brain. You know, the boxer, Simon and Garfunkel song, The Boxer. One of the lines is, a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. I'm going to change that a little bit and say, a human hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. That's from The Boxer. And then another interesting phenomenon relative to a human brain and interpretation of reality is the fact. Here's a quote from a neuroscientist named Patrick Cavanaugh. He's a research professor at Dartmouth College and a senior fellow at Glendon College in Canada, actually. Here's a quote, apparently, from him. It says, it's really important to understand we're not, by the way, let me break in here and say, when you're seeing something or hearing something in our own brain, it's really important to understand that we're not actually seeing reality, what we're conceiving in our brain. We're seeing a story that's being created for us by our own brain. You know what I mean? I mean, there are elements, of course, that of facts that you're seeing, things that you're seeing and facts that you're hearing. But however, how that gets, how it sits and the nest it makes in your brain is created by your brain and that's influenced by your past, other experiences, other things you've learned, all sorts of things. It's unique to you. Whoa. The human brain. And part of course, the reason that this all has come to me is the longer that we deal with the difficulties we have in the political system currently, mainly the Republican Party, and distinct sociopaths such as Donald Trump and the people that follow him, it becomes important that all of us, I think about and keep in mind the workings that are possible in the human brain, and that it's not unusual. These things we're seeing are not unusual. And we have to, therefore, then, in understanding that and not getting worked up and angry, but actually working with those who have brain function like that. Again, it's not new. Understanding it in an understanding way, how to work with people with who are living in those functions of the human brain, their realities, the way they are. Well, we've got to understand it and deal with it in a useful, patient way. And if you want me to tell you what that useful and patient way is, I wish I knew. Hoo-wee. Let's see. Let me do this. I'm going to tell you that I'm thanking you for listening to me today. I'm Ken Logan, family practice doctor in Chico, California. The third Thursday of every month, at least at this point in time, I'm still doing this show. Third Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 in the evening. And I cover, of course, subjects of health or medical subjects that I think are important for us all to sit with and think about. The underwriters for the Doctor's Inn first of all, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by D.A. Lampe Construction. And Lampe is Lampee, a proud supporter of KZFR and Community Radio in Northern California. For more information, visit D.A. Lampe Construction. And that's letter D, letter A, and then Lampe, Lampe. Actually, there's only one E, so Lampe, but it's pronounced Lampe Construction. So visit D.A. Lampe, and that's with one E, construction.com. And by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying, otherwise enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and they are located at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico. And they have been serving the North State since, get this, 1975. This, you're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR, Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond, and also at KZFR.org. That is .org, KZFR.org on the internet. I want you to know this, though. The opinions voiced on this program are my views. They do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. I want to thank the helper here, Mark Baker, for helping me get set up for the show today. And the next show you're going to hear is Planetary Radio. But before Planetary Radio, right now, I'm going to try to give you some Dr. Wu. Let's see if I can do that. See you in a month, the third Thursday of the month, 6 o'clock.
Side of no tomorrow. You walked in and my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piaster I could borrow. All night
NASA's STEM program looks to the moon, this week on Planetary Radio. I'm Sarah El-Ahmed of the Planetary Society, with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Stephen Smith, an education specialist from NASA's Science,